I want to begin this morning's class with a few closed-ended questions. Closed-ended questions are questions that have very short answers. And hopefully you'll see why in just a minute. Did Jesus ever chastise publicans in the New Testament? That's a closed-ended question. Publicans. Tax collectors, publicans, Jesus. Did he ever have anything to say negatively about... Was that question that vague?
Yes,
that question was vague, or yes? Thank you for maintaining my self-esteem there, dear. It's so good to have her back. Yes, of course he did. Did he ever have anything good to say about publicans? Come on, folks. Yes, sir. Thank you, Ben. Yes, he did. He even used the parable comparing publicans and Pharisees. Did he ever have anything to say bad about Pharisees?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's an easier one, right? I didn't give you the easy question to begin with. Yeah, there's a whole chapter. Matthew 25, I think, is where you'll find woe and woe and woe. Lots of negative things to say. Were there any good publicans in the New Testament? Yes, name one, please. Matthew would be one. That would be an excellent example. Can you think of any else? I'm sorry? Maybe Zacchaeus, yeah. I've heard speculation, but yes, Zacchaeus. Now, how about Pharisees? Any good Pharisees in the New Testament?
Yes.
Paul would be a very good one, Saul or Paul. Any others? Nicodemus. Any others? Okay, yeah. Now getting into names that have a little bit more speculation. Titus, Joseph of Arimathea. So my point is, it might be very easy for us just to wipe out all Pharisees as being bad people. All publicans are bad people. In no way am I trying to discount what Jesus said about either. But we have to step back and appreciate the fact that there's still this individual aspect, and so don't stereotype. Now, what's this got to do with our Bible survey study? I want to begin today, and we're on page 23 in the lesson material. If you are visiting, you're somewhat at a disadvantage now because you don't have this chart in front of you. But there's a chart on page 23 I want to spend a little bit of time here with. It captures the United Kingdom as a banner at the top. Then it has the 40 kings of the divided kingdom. It has some dates at the bottom. It has some information about captivities, when they began, deportations, when they began. It's a great chart. I've said that already, but I find myself going back to this chart over and over again. Now, here's my point. We're going to make the point in just a few minutes when we get into the next lesson, lesson 7, that generally speaking, the Northern Kingdom, the 10 tribes that made up the Northern Kingdom, were generally worse than the Southern Kingdom. But in no way should you dismiss the Southern Kingdom or conclude that the Southern Kingdom was without issues. Okay, so these are men. These are men that choose to make decisions. And guess what? Sometimes it seems to be totally unrelated to who dad was. You have good kings who had very bad sons. You had bad kings who had very good sons. And then you have everything in between. Now, I want to look at three examples. There are 40 kings just in the divided kingdom section of this chart, plus the three at the very top. So I got almost 45 kings. We're not covering 45 kings this morning. I want to look at three right now. And then we're going to move into lesson 7, which speaks specifically about the divided kingdom. The first one, look down the right-hand side of the chart. All three of these kings are kings of Judah. Okay, so right off the bat, that should give you some sense of, hey, they're more than likely to be gooder kings, good kings, right? Because if they're on the left-hand side, they're kings of Israel. And now I mean Israel defined as 10 tribes, not God's people Israel. I'm talking Israel 10 versus the 1, 2, or even 3 of the southern kingdom. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a little while. Okay, so that's a high-level generalization. Look down the right-hand side of the page, and I want you to find Jehoram. One of the difficulties we sometimes have is because names tend to start kind of all melding together. There are other Jehorams that you'll find on this page, and it's no different than today. We have different spellings of somewhat the same name. Sometimes John is Jonathan, sometimes it's J-O-H-N, sometimes it's J-O-N, right? I mean, so, and the same with the Bible. But even complicated things in the Bible is sometimes names are changed along the way. I want you to find Jehoram. Do you see him? He's the fifth king down in the divided kingdom section. You find him? Do you find him? Yeah. Thank you, Britt. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. Now, where would I find any information about this king? Yeah, it's right there. Okay, so you don't have to worry about knowing off the top of your head where you might find that. Okay, it's listed right here. Now, I'm going to use the Second Chronicles passages for these three kings, just because, guess what? I hardly ever go to the book of Second Chronicles. So I forced myself to go to the book that I don't study as much. Not that I study the book of First or Second Kings that much either, but we're going to go to Second Chronicles, and I want you to go to chapter 21. Chapter 21 gives us the story of this king Jehoram. Now, as the chart shows, he would be the great-great-great-great-grandson of Rehoboam, and you add one more great to that of Solomon. So he's of Solomon's lineage, as all the kings are on the right-hand side of this chart. And he, who's his dad? Who is his dad? Jehoshaphat. And if the chart's correct, and I believe it is, was Jehoshaphat a good king or a bad king? He was a good king. That does not mean he's perfect. In fact, there are some decisions he made as far as alliances that we scratch our head about. Because why did he align with Ahab? Why did he do this or do that? But generally speaking, the Bible refers to Jehoshaphat as a good king. Welcome to the world of children. Chapter 21 and verse 1. Then Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. And Jehoram, his son, became king in his place. He had brothers, the sons of Jehoshaphat, Azariah, Jehiel, Zechariah, Azariah, who, Michael, and Shephath. I should have had somebody else read this. All these were the sons of Jehoshaphat, king of Israel. So here's Jehoshaphat, and he's got several sons. Verse 3, their father gave them many gifts of silver, gold, and precious things, with fortified cities in Judah, but he gave the kingdom to who? Jehoram. Why? Because he's the firstborn, and that's oftentimes the way it happened. It just automatically went to the oldest. Now we're going to learn a little bit about this man, Jehoram. Now, when Jehoram had taken over the king of his from his father and made himself secure, what's the first order of business? Yes. Kill all your brothers. Folks, this is a king of Judah. This is a king of Judah, not Israel, not wicked and despicable Israel. This is a king of Judah, and the first thing he does, he wipes out all of his family because of what? Competition, yeah. Yeah, you know, just because you're given the kingdom doesn't mean you always get to keep it. You know, there's the people you got to worry about, right? If you read the rest of this chapter, you're going to find Jehoram was just a despicable guy. Look at the last part of the chapter. Verse 20 stands out in my mind. He was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years, and he departed with no one's regret. What does that mean? Maybe glad to see him go, but no one cared. Now, a brief political comment from today. I like some leaders better than I like others. I dislike some leaders more than others. But I guarantee you, it doesn't matter who you're speaking about. If they were to pass away, there would be some people that would like them and would grieve over their departure. Not this guy. Now, there might have been a little bit of an exaggeration here to make a point, but notice that he when he died, no one cared. That's one of your kings of Judah. Now, look back on page 23, and we're going to drop down several kings now. And by the way, we could spend, each one of these has a very unique story, a very interesting, sad oftentimes, but there are some highlights as well. But let's drop down now to the 14th king that's in that list. What's his name? Manasseh. Here's something interesting. This man, let's not call him a gentleman, reigned 55 years. I believe that's the longest of any that you'll find on this entire chart. Even more than Saul, David, Solomon. He reigned longer. Okay. How would you describe Manasseh? How would you describe him? And you might be turning to 2 Chronicles 33 now. How would you describe him? No, that's Josiah. He's 12 years old. You're right. Verse 1. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. But save that point. I know. Okay. He teaches this class. That's not fair. Okay. This guy is one of the most wicked, evil kings that are out there. You thought Jehoram was bad? He killed his brothers. Okay. I mean, it makes sense. Politically, it was probably a smart move. Manasseh was evil to the core. In fact, if you'll see in verse 6, and Britt, that's correct, and Joel, you're right on where I plan on going to, and I'm going to let you make that point in just a minute. He did those despicable things that Sean was sharing with us a few weeks ago. We were talking about Baal and all that sort of things. He went so far as to sacrifice children, his children. Folks, people that do that don't deserve to live. They don't deserve to live because they have totally missed the whole point, the sanctity of life, the everything about that, and how we're created in God's own image. I understand they thought they were doing it for religious purposes. They were so far off the mark, it's ridiculous. This is Manasseh in chapter 33. Look at verse 9. Thus Manasseh misled Judah and its inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than who? The nations whom the Lord destroyed before the sons of Israel. I believe sometimes we get this idea that here's good Israel and then here's everybody else. It's not that way. Yes, God chose Israel, and there's some unique aspects about that relationship, but Israel was oftentimes very, very bad. Yes, Eric?
There was evil in the world, and we call it a tutor in the New Testament, Jesus right. Christ, but what it was in the beginning was a restrainer. It was just a restraint. It wasn't to teach you how to be good, because without the heart, you couldn't be taught that, but it was to tell you how to restrain your evil. So essentially, don't murder, even if murder's in your heart, don't murder, and then it keeps it smaller. So,
and Eric has referred to what we've studied a few weeks ago is why was the law there? And Galatians, particularly Galatians, tells us very clearly why the law is there. The children of Israel needed that instruction. They needed that guidance. But we also have mentioned and studied in this class that God had a relationship with other nations. We're going to see that next week when we look at the prophets specifically. Some of the books of the Bible are written specifically to nations other than God's people, if you'll allow me to give it that term. But here's Manasseh. He's so bad, he's even compared to those evil nations, and he takes the cake. He is worse than they are. And if you continue, just a few verses down, he reaches out to the Lord. But what is a just Lord going to do? I mean, the Lord knows as well as we do from verse 9 the type of person that Manasseh was. What does the Lord do? What's the rest of the story, Joel? What happens to Manasseh?
He got taken into captivity in Nosedos by the Assyrians. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of Nebuchadnezzar, where God humbles the king. And at that point, but you wonder, it's speculation, but his father was that guy. So you wonder if he knew all along. It's not like you think. He knew the truth, is what I believe.
That's interesting. Because, look at your chart. His dad, Hezekiah, was one of the better kings. Hezekiah, I mean, great stories of Hezekiah. You know, he's told by the Lord, you're going to die. He prays to the Lord. The Lord says, okay, I'm going to give you some more time. Give you 15 more years. But here's his son, Manasseh, who does all these despicable things. But then, if you look at verses 10 through 15 and so on, he starts correcting everything. He starts trying to fix it. And he actually turns out to be a pretty good king. And yet, the evil he did was just horrific. But here's this constant God through all this, who loves those that seek him and are penitent. Even Manasseh. Third king I want you to look at is Josiah, just a few kings down from Manasseh. Actually, he would be the grandson of Manasseh. What do we know about Josiah? What do we remember about Josiah? Yeah, he was even younger than Manasseh was, to Britt's comment earlier. He was only 8 years old. Now, the way it was set up back then, if you were made king at 8, you didn't make rules. You didn't sit in your judgment seat and make decisions. You had help, okay? But the point is, he was young when he started. And what is, for those of us who have been studying the Bible for some time, any takeaway lessons from Josiah? Do you remember any unique stories about Josiah specifically? He found something. What did he find? Or it was found on his watch. Yeah. Now, that's how bad things had gotten, folks. And to Jack's point, we're now in chapter 34. Just turn over a page probably in your Bible. Here's Josiah, 8 years old, down in verse 8. In his 18th year of his reign, he starts doing some purging, some cleaning. And lo and behold, some of his people, we use that term nowadays, I have people, some of his people find something in the temple. What'd they find? What did they find? Folks, they didn't find some missing shawl or a missing sock or maybe even something a little bit more, you know, prestigious than those items, but still, they found the law. Now, what does that imply? If they found the law, the lost book of law, what does that imply about it?
Pardon
me?
They lost it.
Yeah, it was lost, which means they were following it. It probably had been tucked away for some time, and it just was very much not a part of them. And you'll find periods throughout the Old Testament where there were, you know, when sacrifices were stopped, when certain things didn't happen, because the people just got on with their normal everyday life, and they forgot about what God's expectations of them were back in Leviticus and so forth. Okay. So those are three kings. Those are three kings, three very different kings. By the way, who was his dad? Who was Josiah's dad? Ammon. How's he described? Bad. Okay, so again, let's just dismiss this idea. Because you have a good dad, you're going to be a good son. Maybe, maybe not. Ezekiel 18 reminds us that there is no connection in the two. Well, obviously there is some connection. That is, we have influence on our children, how we teach them, how we rear them, how we train them, right? That's all there. But just because I choose to live a certain way has really no bearing on what my son or what my daughter chooses to do. And that's just the plain of it. Okay, I want to look now. Eric, we'll get to you in a few minutes. Okay, I want to look at page 24 now. Pardon me, 26. This is the next lesson. Everything I've said so far is coupled with this, okay? I don't want to lose this point before I go to his comment. You're going to see some categorical comments on this page, and they're spot on. They are exactly right. But do not dismiss the fact that there are exceptions about good and bad. Okay, so I want to leave that point. I want to make sure that point lands very strongly with us, because that's applicable in the New Testament. You know, this congregation could fall off the deep end. Nobody alarmed, okay? The question isn't so much what this congregation does. What about you? What about me? Ultimately, we stand at the judgment with just me, or just you. And that sounds preachy, but that's exactly what this book is trying to teach you and me, is be spiritual regardless. Be the best person that you can be, regardless of your mate, your brother, your sister, your son, your daughter, your mom, your dad, your society. Be the best person you can be, period. That's a takeaway from me from this section of the Old Testament. Yes, sir. Okay. To Eric's point is, you know, again, we struggle with time. And if you look back on that chart, which I put back in my notebook now, but how much time has transpired from the top of the page down to the bottom? Did you notice that? How much time was in the United Kingdom? United Kingdom. Saul, David, Solomon. 3 times 40. 120, okay. And then, if you compare, and I think it even shows Solomon at the very top, approximately 971 to 930. Okay, 931. Okay, if you do the math and you go from 931 down to the very bottom right-hand corner, you'll see 3 deportation dates. And let's just make the math easier. Let's say it's 600 BC. So 930 to 600 BC is 330 years. The Northern Kingdom didn't last that long. Didn't last that long. Only 200 and something years. But it didn't happen overnight. But another takeaway, since he made this point, and I think it's a good point, notice also, I'm getting away from my podium. Look at how long some of these men served. We mentioned Manasseh already as 55 years. You notice anything unusual by this chart about anybody else?
The Northern King, 1 month.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of them didn't last very long at all. Now, we would have to go in and look at each one of these individually to determine, well, why was it? Because sometimes there was something very something real bad, okay? Some might have gone right into war, and they died in battle. Others lived in more peaceful periods of time, and yet maybe it was the cousin that came and got them, and there was a revolt, there was a mutiny, or something like that. There's all sorts of different causes behind each one of these men's eventual death. So you can't even compare them in the time served as the king. It's just an amazing time with so many things changing. Okay? Now, we are going to go to page 26. How am I doing on time, Eric?
15
minutes. I have 15 minutes? You're giving me back some of the time you took from me earlier in class, aren't you? Okay. All right. Now, this is a high level page. This is a page about kings and kingdoms. We're going to cover it today, and then next week we will look at the prophet pages, which is the next 3 pages to follow. Okay, just so you have a sense of where we're going to be. We're looking at page 26. I want to take you now to the book of 1 Kings. So if you would please turn to the book of 1 Kings. I really want to show you, remind many of us, what happened to cause this mess. I asked last week, and I got three different answers, I think. What caused Israel as a whole to move from a united kingship type setup to a divided kingdom? And there were comments about Solomon. That is exactly correct. There were comments about the people. Exactly correct. So there are a myriad of answers, but let me also remind you what the Bible says, and we're picking up the storyline of the Bible in 1 Kings, the 11th chapter. And if you look at the first 13 verses, this is the passage that we don't like to read about with Solomon, because we'd like to talk about his glory and his fame and all the things that were wonderful about him. Well, that'd just be a chapter or two before. It's the chapter before where the Queen of Sheba comes to him trying to just witness his wisdom. Now, that's remarkable that another ruler, a world ruler, would come to just sit and listen at your feet because they've heard how wise you are. That's chapter 10. Chapter 11 talks about how he's turned from the Lord. And he, notice verse 2, it says he held fast to those that he loved. All these foreign women, verse 1. And it even mentions some of the areas that they come from. These are the same very areas that Israel has been told, stay away from them, keep yourself pure, don't intermarry, don't do all these things. Look at verse 4. Solomon did not have the heart of his father David. That's pretty clear. That's concise. Solomon, you know what's wrong with you? You're not like your dad. You're not like your dad. Solomon did evil inside the Lord. Verse 6, verse 9, the Lord was angry with Solomon. He did not observe verse 10 and verse 13. However, I will not tear away all the kingdom from you, but I'm taking most of it. Solomon, I've given you kingship. You've asked for wisdom. I've given you wisdom. You have Israel at its peak. You have it when everything is clicking, if you will. Allow me to say that, because that doesn't mean everything in Israel is perfect at this time. But generally speaking, as a nation, things are finally clicking. They're no longer nomads. They're no longer trying to figure this out. How are we going to subdue this group? How are we going to subdue that group? For the most part, they've got things subdued. And Solomon takes off after foreign women, and we know that story. So God decides in verse 13, actually he's decided, and he tells Solomon, he says, there's some things that are going to happen now. I'm going to take most of the kingdom away from you. Now, look several verses later, and in verse 26, there's a man named Jeroboam. Jeroboam is not a son of Solomon. He's a trusted hand. He actually works for Solomon. He's part of Solomon's empire. He's part of Solomon's people. And he is well respected by the people. And notice he's described in verse 28. He's a valiant warrior. And when Solomon saw the young man was industrious, he appointed him over all the forced labor of the house of Joseph. Wow, this is kind of sounds like Joseph, right, of the book of Genesis? This is Jeroboam. He's kind of where he needs to be, and he's handling it very well. And even Solomon recognizes, this guy is a guy I'm glad I have around. I'm going to give him more responsibility because he handles responsibility very well. Well, that's great. Drop down a few more verses. There's a prophet that speaks to Jeroboam and says, by the way, this is what's going to happen. I'm in verse 31. First of all, oftentimes in the Bible, there is some sort of pictorial representation to help people appreciate that. And notice in verse 31, there's a tearing of this garment, 10 pieces. And this is when the prophet tells Jeroboam, you're going to get 10 pieces. You're going to get 10 pieces, but God has not given it all to you. Now, you think about it. You're getting 10 out of 12? That's a pretty good deal, right? Well, what we learn later is he doesn't get Jerusalem. He doesn't get the extreme southern part of the, from a geographical standpoint, he gets, that's why they're called the Northern Kingdom, right? Is because it's really north of Jerusalem. And then the two and a half tribes are on the east side of Jordan as well. But, so he's told here, verse 35, I will take the kingdom from the son of Solomon's hand and give it to you, even 10 tribes. Okay, and then the chapter wraps up with, guess what? Solomon heard about this. What do you think Solomon, how do you think Solomon feels about Jeroboam being told you're going to get 10 tribes? Now, the Lord's already told Solomon. I mean, this is kind of funny. It's sad funny, but the Lord's already told Solomon, I'm taking the kingdom away from you. And now you have prophets that are identifying, Jeroboam, you're the one that's going to take over. You're already well respected throughout the land. You're the one that's going to lead the 10 tribes. What does Solomon do? He wants to kill him. So what do you do if you're Jeroboam? You run to Egypt. Okay, it seems like Egypt throughout the both New Testament and Old Testament is a convenient place to run to. Okay, well, it makes sense. So Jeroboam leaves. Now, chapter 12. Okay, Solomon has to die, right? He has to die before any of this is really going to matter because he's still the king. And chapter 12, which we've identified as really the beginning of the divided, one of the two passages where it begins the divided kingdom, Rehoboam, which is who? Who's Rehoboam? He's Solomon's son. He's the heir apparent, folks. He's the one that should be leading Israel. But Dad messed that up. Dad messed that up. Okay, so now Rehoboam, you have a chance to do things right. Remember, back where we started today's class, just because Solomon made some mistakes doesn't necessarily put Rehoboam in this camp or that camp. Okay? And so here's Rehoboam's opportunity. And what is the big issue? We mentioned this last week. What was the real issue for the people? Taxes. They hated taxes. They hated being under a king because of all the burden that's expected with a king. And that's exactly what God told the children through Samuel was going to happen. Okay, you want a king, this is what's going to happen. And so, what do you do? If you're now the new king, what do you do if you're faced with a dilemma? What do you do about it? What do you do?
Get advice.
You get advice. So who do you go to? Pardon me? Well, thank you. That should be... Thank you for... That's the gooder answer. Did he go to the older people? Yes. Yes. So give him some credit. He did go. He sought the counsel of the advisors, those that are elders. And let's see. Verse 6. He consults with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive. Verse 7. And notice it's this whole idea of servant leadership. He says in verse 7, if you'll be a servant. Wait a minute. We're talking about the king here. And these advisors said, if you'll be a servant to the people, see, they don't have it backwards. They recognize what a king in many ways serves the people. The people serve the king. Verse 7 again, if you'll be a servant to this people and will serve them and grant them their petition and speak good words to them, they will do what? They'll be your servants forever. You would think that would be something that you'd want to just jump on. But verse 8 says, but he forsook the counsel of the elders which they had given him and consulted with the young men who grew up with him and served him. I want to say something real quickly. I forwarded a note this last week, which I thought had a lot of value, about honoring and respecting young people. And I think we oftentimes do dishonor and disrespect young people. That was not intended to suggest that we turn everything over to young people. That would be ludicrous, okay? Young men and women do not lead the church, period. You know that. We know that. That's just commonsensical. But somehow we got to find that balance. And sometimes we dismiss those of a different age because guess what? They're not what? They're not our age. Yeah, you know who older people mostly hang out with? Older people. You know who younger people mostly hang out with? Younger people. Now you think, okay, Rod, come on, can we get serious? I'm extremely serious at this point. I tell you, there have been times in the past where young people, some even in this congregation, have reached out and engaged those of us who are older. That is commendable. That is commendable for them to do that. But I tell you, so often those of us who are older don't always reach out to those who are younger. Okay? Eric?
There's a subtext running through this, and that is Solomon didn't entirely follow this advice himself. So he had counselors, and I think they were actually speaking from a negative experience. They were saying, Solomon did force labor. Solomon ruled and edged over the people. Maybe you should just be a ruling servant, and that would be a lot better, and they would serve you forever. And so they were actually giving advice to not force.
And that may be, okay. Experience. There's a little bit of speculation in that, but I understand.
The younger group, though, then gives the opposite advice. It said, use force.
Right. Well, and if you look at look at verse 10, it says, my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. I mean, that was his message back to people. He says, you haven't seen anything yet. Joel?
Kind of goes to your conversation about people being good or bad and how we shade them based on a word we read on a page. Rehoboam, Solomon, we talked about this last week. When you read the book of Proverbs, when you read the first at least five chapters, who is that probably being written to?
Okay, I was almost there.
Okay. But then the other thing I want to point out is about Jeroboam. We think Jeroboam, bad king. And he was a bad king.
But not entirely bad.
But here's the thing. God made him the same offer as David. He said, he even referenced David. If you will obey my commandments, I will establish your throne just like I did David. Not necessarily messianic, but he made the same offer to Jeroboam.
So this keeps taking us back to this consistent, constant God who always seeks things a certain way. He seeks people to have a relationship with him. He will bless them. But there are conditions oftentimes. I was going to make the point, Joel actually came up to me after last week's class, which I think is an excellent point, is, why did all this happen? Because Rehoboam didn't listen to his dad. In the first, three, four chapters, maybe five or six even, of Proverbs, my son. This is Solomon writing to his son, Rehoboam. Did Rehoboam listen? Not entirely. I'm not saying he didn't listen at all, and I don't want to dismiss any of these people as entirely bad. Maybe Jehoram. Yeah, there's nothing good said about him at all. But for the most part, that kind of kicks things off. It kind of is what caused all of this to happen. Now look at page 26. 10 tribes, 2 tribes. I think this actually says 1 tribe. There's an anomaly in my mind. You can talk to me about this later. Judah's to the south. Benjamin is right next to Judah. Those are the 2 tribes that make up the Judah piece now. Simeon seems to almost kind of have been lost geographically. They're kind of over that same category, or that same geographical area. But the bottom line is we do know that the two, Judah and Benjamin, are part of this southern kingdom. Now, what's one of the first decisions that Jeroboam had to face now as king? Where are people going to worship? Because where were Jewish people supposed to worship? In Jerusalem. Uh-oh. A little bit of a problem there, right? Because the way this has been dissected now, Jerusalem isn't part of the northern kingdom. So what do you do? What do you do? That's exactly what he did. He said, well, okay, you don't need Jerusalem. We can make this work, and I'm going to set up other places of worship. You just start to see these bad decisions being made by both Jeroboam and Rehoboam. Page 26 again, you have a little over 200 years for the northern kingdom. You have a little over 300 years for the southern kingdom. Maybe that's part of the reason why the southern kingdom lasted longer, because it was more gooder than the other. Halfway down the page, I do want to mention this. It does come to the point where God says, I'm done with the northern kingdom. And I'm going to bring in Assyria, another nation. I'm going to bring them in, and they're going to take you away, and you're never coming back. Now, that's important, because he never says that about Judah. But the northern kingdom, he says, you're not coming back. And there's something interesting that the Assyrians did. They take Jewish people and take them from their home, and they send them to other parts of their empire. And what else do? Couple with that, they bring other people into those places where Jews used to live. And now, over time, you have interbreeding, and you have a group of people that by the time the New Testament happens are just very common part of the world. And what are they called? Samaritans. And so when you read in the New Testament about Samaritans and how the Jews will have no dealings with Samaritans, it's because 700 years ago, Jews and other nations started cohabitating and having families. And so they're, in their minds, half-breeds. They're certainly not pure Jews. And that's why you have that strong animosity in the New Testament. Very bottom of the page. How am I doing, Eric? I'm up. Okay. We will look at the bottom of page 26 next time. And then we'll talk about the prophets as well. Thank you for your comments.